16. Jim heard me. He thrust his head around the connecting door. As he came to my bed, Atticus's light flashed on. We stayed where we were until it went off. We heard him turn over, and we waited until he was still again. Jim took me to his room and put me in bed beside him. "Try to go to sleep," he said. "It'll be all over after tomorrow, maybe." We had come in quietly so as not to wake Auntie. Atticus killed the engine in the driveway and coasted to the car house. We went in the back door and to our rooms without a word. I was very tired and was drifting into sleep when the memory of Atticus calmly folding his newspaper and pushing back his hat became Atticus standing in the middle of an empty waiting street, pushing up his glasses. The full meaning of the night's events hit me, and I began crying. Jim was awfully nice about it. For once, he didn't remind me that people nearly 9 years old didn't do things like that. Everybody's appetite was delicate this morning, except Jim's. He ate his way through 3 eggs. Atticus watched in frank admiration. Aunt Alexandra sipped coffee and radiated waves of disapproval. Children who slipped out at night were a disgrace to the family. Atticus said he was right glad his disgraces had come along, but Auntie said, "Nonsense. Mr. Underwood was there all the time." "You know, it's a funny thing about Braxton," said Atticus. "He despises Negroes. Won't have one near him." Local opinion held Mr. Underwood to be an intense, profane little man whose father, in a fey fit of humor, christened Braxton Bragg, a name Mr. Underwood had done his best to live down. Atticus said naming people after Confederate generals made slow, steady drinkers. Calpurnia was serving Aunt Alexandra more coffee, and she shook her head at what I thought was a pleading, winning look. "You're still too little," she said. "I'll tell you when you ain't." I said it might help my stomach. "All right," she said, and got a cup from the sideboard. She poured 1 tablespoon of coffee into it and filled the cup to the brim with milk. I thanked her by sticking out my tongue at it and looked up to catch Auntie's warning frown. But she was frowning at Atticus. She waited until Calpurnia was in the kitchen. Then she said, "Don't talk like that in front of them." "Talk like what in front of whom?" he asked. "Like that in front of Calpurnia. You said Braxton Underwood despises Negroes right in front of her." "Well, I'm sure Cal knows it. Everybody in Macomb knows it." I was beginning to notice a subtle change in my father these days that came out when he talked with Aunt Alexandra. It was a quiet digging in, never outright irritation. There was a faint starchiness in his voice when he said, "Anything fit to say at the tables, fit to say in front of Calpurnia, she knows what she means to this family." "I don't think it's a good habit, Atticus. It encourages them. You know how they talk among themselves. Everything that happens in this town's out in the quarters before sundown." My father put down his knife. "I don't know of any law that says they can't talk. Maybe if we didn't give them so much to talk about, they'd be quiet. Why don't you drink your coffee, Scout?" I was playing in it with the spoon. "I thought Mr. Cunningham was a friend of ours. You told me a long time ago he was."
"He still is."
"But last night he wanted to hurt you." Atticus placed his fork beside his knife and pushed his plate aside. "Mr. Cunningham's basically a good man," he said. "He just has his blind spots along with the rest of us." Jim spoke. "Don't call that a blind spot. He'd have killed you last night when he first went there." "He might have hurt me a little." Atticus conceded. But, son, you'll understand folks a little better when you're older. A mob's always made up of people, no matter what. Mr. Cunningham was part of a mob last night, but he was still a man. Every mob in every little southern town is always made up of people, you know. Doesn't say much for them, does it? I'll say not, said Jim. So it took an 8-year-old child to bring them to their senses, didn't it? Said Atticus. That proves something, that a gang of wild animals can be stopped, simply because they're still human. Maybe we need a police force of children. You children last night made Walter Cunningham stand in my shoes for a minute. That was enough. Well, I hope Jim would understand folks a little better when he was older. I wouldn't. First day Walter comes back to school will be his last, I affirmed. You will not touch him, Atticus said flatly. I don't want either of you bearing a grudge about this thing, no matter what happens. You see, don't you, said Aunt Alexandra, what comes of things like this? Don't say I haven't told you. Atticus said he'd never say that, pushed out his chair and got up. There's a day ahead, so excuse me. Jim, I don't want you and Scout downtown today, please. As Atticus departed, Dill came bounding down the hall into the dining room. It's all over town this morning, he announced, all about how we held off 100 folks with our bare hands. Aunt Alexandra stared him to silence. It was not 100 folks, she said, and nobody held anybody off. It was just a nest of those Cunninghams, drunk and disorderly. Aw, Annie, that's just Jill's way, said Jim. He signaled us to follow him. You all stay in the yard today, she said, as we made our way to the front porch.